This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. The Guardians finishing up. By the way, Elijah Moore going to the Buffalo Bills. Good, bad. We're going to talk about that in a second. Andy's got this.
You know, the Browns were part of the biggest stories in the NFL draft, trading down in the first round, then drafting Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round. Don't miss Daryl Ryder and me as we talk about it in our latest edition of It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, where we'll talk about everything that's going on, especially with the Browns quarterback situation. Subscribe to It's Always Game Day in Cleveland now at 92.3thefan.com or on the Odyssey app. Wherever you get your podcast, you can always watch on YouTube. Sponsored locally by our good friends at Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. That's right, Smiley One and Bryant.
Is Elijah Moore the one who got away after Dan does this?
It's time to check on Cleveland starting now. Powered by Bet365 Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the Cleveland Guardians.
All right, gentlemen, your starting lineup today for the 1 o'clock start against the Minnesota Twins.
Who's in the squad? Oh, wait a minute. You'll tell me that in a minute. You'll tell me that in a minute.
Anytime we can, Mike Kruko, man. Anytime that we can pay homage to Mike Kruko, we're going to do it. The left fielder, Stephen Kwan, your leadoff hitter. Second base, Gabriel Arias will be hitting second for the Cleveland Guardians today. Jose Ramirez, the designated hitter, will be hitting third. Manning first base, Kyle Manzardo hitting fourth today. Hitting fifth, Jenkenzie Noel, the right fielder. Hitting sixth, the center fielder.
Yeah.
Daniel Schneeman.
Okay.
The way we all drew it up. Hitting seventh, the third baseman, Will Wilson.
Manning short. Where's Will playing? Third?
Third.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's see what Will can do. This could be fun. Former first-round pick.
Third base today, hitting eighth, hitting eighth, Brian Rocchio.
He's back after not being in there for 2 days.
And hitting ninth.
Yeah.
In the squat, throwing down the signs.
Hedgy.
Austin Hedges.
Yeah, baby. There we go.
Hosting himself, of course, as well, a lovely 9.00 ERA after his outing. One inning pitch. He got one strikeout in the matter, but also gave up the bomb as well. And that is the starting lineup for the Cleveland Guardians today.
That's Cleveland starting now. Powered by Bet365 Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the Cleveland Guardians.
And as a public service to all of you that are coming down to the ballpark for this early game today, don't forget those normal $8 lots. They're $30 a pop. Did you catch that walking in?
I saw a 20 across the street from our 30.
Capitalism.
Oh.
Yeah. Should have bought that vacant land in downtown.
Why didn't we buy parking lots downtown?
I don't know.
It's one of my biggest regrets in life is to not try to buy a parking lot.
Yeah, we should have done that. You know, there's some land in Brook Park that.
Anyhow. Hey, any chance we can buy part of the wing that they don't use at Hopkins anymore?
I don't think that's possible.
Maybe we can get some land over there. They have a bunch of trucks parked over there. Maybe we can get a parking lot over there.
By the way,
bus back and forth? It's a pretty good idea.
Did you hear the pitching advice that Austin Hedges gave to Will Wilson when two position players pitched recently? Wilson went up to him and said, hey, I haven't pitched since high school. What should I do? And he said, throw it as slow as you can over the plate.
That was
as slow as you can. You know why? Major leaguers, they don't hit that stuff. They never see slow stuff. And that's how some of these position guys get out of there without giving up 14 runs. Cracks me up. Elijah Moore is now a Buffalo Bill.
Their slow stuff, though, I think we'd have trouble hitting the slow stuff too, don't you?
Oh, I don't know.
I think so. I think we'd have trouble hitting him with their slow stuff.
Not enough knuckleballers anymore.
That's the truth.
Oh, Tom Candiotti, where are you?
Elijah Moore is now a Buffalo Bill. Will we be spinning the wheel of regret over not keeping Elijah Moore?
I would have said yes, and then I looked up again this morning. He had 3 touchdowns while he was here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say no.
I will say no as well. And I say that for this reason. If you happen to recall, and if you played fantasy football, you might happen to recall, when he came into the NFL as a member of the New York Jets, he was really cooking his rookie year. I mean, he had it going his rookie year. And put up some pretty good numbers in receptions, in yardage, in average, and in touchdowns. And then got hurt. And he hasn't put up those kind of numbers since. Second year in New York, it didn't really work for him very well. And, you know, his numbers dipped a little bit. And then he came to the Browns, and those numbers, though receptions and yardage went up because he was healthy, effectiveness really didn't. And I can blame some of that on the offense, but I don't think you can blame all of it on the offense. I do think his best work came, like most everybody, when Jameis was throwing him the football. But you guys tell me, Elijah Moore with questions about productivity, Deontay Johnson with questions about Deontay Johnson. Which way would you rather go if you're the Browns?
I'm willing to roll a dice on Deontay Johnson.
I am too.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. That doesn't seem to bother. I mean, look, maybe he just had one crazy year last year and he can find himself. Again, the productivity you got out of Elijah Moore just wasn't what you had hoped for.
And
out of the whole offense.
I'm okay
with it. I don't know. Is it a wash?
All
he's got to do is get in the end zone once this year, and you've given him the same offense that you got out of Moore.
Well, so. if Deontay Johnson can play the way he did early in Pittsburgh and not when he fell out of favor with Mike Tomlin,
mm-hmm.
and if he can even actually just play the way he played at Carolina last year before they moved him to Baltimore, I think you're better off with Deontay Johnson.
I think so too. I don't have an argument against you on this one. I want to see what Deontay Johnson looks like playing for the Browns. I don't know. Maybe this is what he needs. Maybe he needs a change of scenery. Maybe he needs his third AFC North team before he goes to Cincinnati after this one. I don't know, but I'm a little bit more optimistic about Deontay Johnson than I was about Elijah Moore.
We just
never saw out of him what we thought we were going to see.
Well, Deontay's produced big-time numbers as a wide receiver in the NFL.
Yes,
you know, he did it with Pittsburgh. If the Browns can get him on track, and I think maybe on track more than anything, can they get his head in the right spot? You know, that seemed to be the issue last year. Seemed to be. He wouldn't go into a game for Baltimore. Okay, you're not going to last here. Boom, you're in Houston. Wait a minute. You're here a couple of games. You're out. Baltimore signs him in hopes of getting a draft pick. So last year was just a disaster for that guy. And he was in Carolina. Remember when he went to Carolina, everybody thought, wow, Carolina picked up Deontay Johnson. That could be a really good fit there. That could really work. Great weapon for Bryce Young. You know, that was the whole thought there. And it really didn't turn out that way. And he was okay, but he was in the last year of his contract, so they decided to move him and, you know, enhance their draft situation. And they didn't enhance it much. And then he went to Baltimore, and it became just a mess of a 2024 season for him. I would think that he's sharp enough. I would think his management, agents, everybody else, sharp enough to say, Deontay, your career is like in perilous shape right now. You better go to Cleveland and go play football and perform, because otherwise you're going to be like one of those guys knocking on the door of the UFL, and not because of talent. Because he has some talent, Andy. And I hope he can, because if he comes here and has his mind where it's supposed to be, I think he's a huge help for the offense. I really do. You know, he's one of those guys that we mentioned on Monday that, I think it was Monday, that, hey, they need wide receivers. They didn't draft anybody. These guys are available. He was one of them, and they signed him the next day. You know, that's not brilliance on our part. What it is it's a very small select group that's still available. And I think he was probably the best one of the bunch, and they signed him.
There's one other part of this story that kind of makes me wonder when we talk about Elijah Moore going to Buffalo, right? So Amari Cooper goes to Buffalo.
Yeah.
And now he's out.
And Amari is still a free agent.
Right. I was reading some stuff about him going back to Dallas. But it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Their front office was not happy. It was more than just McCarthy and him when he was out of Dallas.
They didn't seem happy with him.
No.
And he didn't seem happy here at the end, whether that was quarterback or what. You know, I thought Amari did a really nice job here. And if he's still available and they want to bring Amari back, great. You know, the question is going to be, does Amari have anything left?
Yeah.
And I hate to say that because you would think, well, of course he does. He's not that old. Except he went to Buffalo, was supposed to be the answer, and he wasn't. And he wasn't. And didn't produce very much for the Bills. And if you have followed Amari's career at all, people here didn't want to hear this when I brought it up in the past. Amari's career is dotted with these unbelievable games where he puts up huge numbers, huge. They kick him over 1,000 yards for the season. He's had numerous 200-yard receiving games. You get a couple of those in a season, boom, there's your 1,000 yards. But it was the week in, week out, is this guy going to be a beast for me? And if you said yes, I think you were just being optimistic. I really like him. I do. But his career is dotted with these unbelievable games. And maybe not the overall consistency that you're looking for out of a guy that you considered your top-notch wide receiver. That said, if you're the Browns, would you check him out, see if he's got anything left, work him out? I'd bring him in for a workout, Andy. I want to see what he has.
I don't know.
And I still
look
want
at the
DJ,
numbers, how
DJ
they went
Chark,
down.
By the
how
way.
How the numbers went down for Amari Cooper while he was here. They went up yards-wise his second season. And then, you know, what they got.
Look on game logs and look at some of those unbelievable numbers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
I mean, huge games. But those.
He had 9 touchdowns that first season here after coming from
right.
the Cowboys.
He was really good.
That was his best year in the NFL. Think about that. 9 touchdowns in one season was the best year that he had. He was coming off of in 2021, he had 8 for the Cowboys. Then he came in and had 9 in 2022 for the Browns. You know, and just looking back, his best season. Yards wise was with the Browns too, 2023.
Well, he was good here.
Yeah.
And that's why if I'm the Browns and whatever the root of the breakup was here, if that can be repaired, if it has been repaired, if it's doable, I would bring Amari in and I would ask him to work out. He might not want to work out, but he went to Buffalo, didn't have much. I'm curious as to what he has left. That said,
I don't think it hurts him to bring him in.
No,
you know, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
As long as you don't have to give him guaranteed money, you don't even have to work him out. You can just bring him in, and if it doesn't work, you can trade him or you can release him. There's a guy named DJ Chark.
Oh, I know
who's out there.
About
I would do the same thing with DJ Chark. This team just needs some wide receivers, and I don't know where they're going to find them at this point unless they make a trade, which is a possibility. We'll see about that.
I'm going to apologize to the listener base now before what I'm going to start with this.
Oh, boy.
Andy, every time he says it, do you start singing the song?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay,
every
too.
Time.
Okay, good. Good. Because I've gotten a couple tweets as well from people who have the song. I'm not going to sing it because I'm not going to get it stuck in people's heads, which would just be mean and cruel and uncalled for. But every time you bring up DJ Chark, I start singing the song.
Do you know where he's going with this?
I don't know.
Really?
No.
I'm not singing it because I think that would be up there with the rules of the Geneva Convention.
Sunday, Cavaliers, Indiana Pacers, Game 1, Eastern Conference Semifinals. Folks, this one's going to be a matchup.
In fact, just got a text from a buddy with the song in it.
Pacers are better than you probably are giving them credit for being. Their play-by-play guy is Mark Boyle, and he's going to join us next right here on Baskin and Phelps. Now, if you're looking to talk Indiana Pacers, there's only one guy to talk with. And that's the man who has been their play-by-play man for 35 years. He's one of the best in the NBA. And he's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He's Mr. Mark Boyle. Mark, good to have you with us. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Well, we're thinking that this is going to be one heck of a series going in. And we know the Cavs were really good in the regular season. I think the Pacers are a terrific basketball team that picked up some big-time experience in the playoffs last year, knocked off Milwaukee and New York. How do you see this as a matchup going in, Mark?
Well, to put it succinctly, the regular season demonstrated that the Cavs are the better team. However, in my view at least, they're not so much better that the Pacers couldn't win this series. So, in other words, I would, if forced to pick a team, I would go with Cleveland, but it would be a shaky pick.
What does Indiana need to do to win the series?
Well, the problem on a general level is that everything the Pacers are good at, the Cavaliers are as good at or maybe better. For example, Indiana's a really good offensive team. Cleveland is a great offensive team. Indiana's an adequate defensive team. Cleveland is a good defensive team. Rebounding, major weakness for the Pacers, not so for the Cavs. The one area where the Pacers almost always have the advantage is turnover differential, but the Cavs are just as good there too. Both teams have deep benches. So in other words, the Pacers don't have a clear advantage in any category, but they're close enough in all of them that they can make it interesting. And the one thing from their perspective that gives reason for optimism is they have gotten better each month. They were good in the Milwaukee series. They feel really good about themselves. And this, to me, looks like a really competitive series.
It's funny, Mark, you mentioned what the Cavs do well, the Pacers are pretty good at as well. We talked about that yesterday because all of the offensive numbers that the Cavaliers have really thrived at, just look a notch or two behind throughout the standings, and they're sitting right there, the Pacers right there with them. And to me, that means maybe you look at some matchups. Do you like the smaller backcourt of the Cavs against the bigger backcourt? Do the Cavs in the front court have such an advantage that it negates that? That's to me where this might come down to, okay, how does this play out?
Well, you can see how it played out by looking at the regular season games. Dismiss the two games in April because those were right. Decided by players that for the most part will be inconsequential in this series. Go back to January when the Pacers had started their improvement. They were 10-15 at one time and finished impressively. They were 2-11 on the road at one time and finished 20-20. So they got better as time went on, and if we go back to those January games, we see that they were very competitive. The Pacers won in Cleveland. The Cavaliers won in Indianapolis.
Without Tyrese playing for the Pacers in that game.
Correct. And so as far as matchups are concerned, it's mix and match, and there will be adjustments throughout the course of the series as both coaches try to exploit whatever they perceive to be advantages. But I don't know that there's any one matchup that definitely will be the determining factor in this series. Halliburton's terrific. Do the Cavaliers have a matchup for him? Mitchell is great. Can the Pacers take care of him? Cleveland has bigger front court guys. Is that a problem for the Pacers? It always comes down to ebb and flow, and each game is different. And by the end of game one, there might be a different storyline going to game two. In our series with Milwaukee, we saw that dramatically on display when by the fifth game of the series, Milwaukee was only starting one guy that started in the first game. So things can change dramatically during a playoff series. I don't necessarily look at any one matchup as critical. It's just an equation where everything is important. And the determining factor might be something we're not even thinking of. Who knows?
Mark, you talked about how the Pacers got better throughout the season, especially when you look at some of the defensive numbers over the last couple weeks and last maybe month or so or more than that. Why? What made the defense better? Is it health? Is it psychology or performance? I mean, just why is the defense better now than it was in the beginning of the season?
Well, partly it's health. Their two best perimeter defenders were out for extended stretches, Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard, so that was a factor. And then they changed their emphasis. They were a great offensive team last year, great, historically good. This year they're really good, but they've taken a step back while they've improved defensively, and so they've changed their focus, and getting those two guys back, and to a lesser degree Ben Shepherd, who has been in the rotation until the end of the season when he suffered a toe injury and has been in and out of the rotation in these five playoff games. Those are three really good defenders on the perimeter, and that's made a difference. But generally, they've decided we can't win unless we do better defensively. And the reality for them is this. With the roster they have, they'll never be great defensively, but I think they've really maxed out, and they're good enough defensively, at least in my opinion, that they can compete with anyone because they're so good offensively. Their major Achilles has been and will continue to be rebounding. They are a very, very poor rebounding team.
Mark Boyle joining us. He is the 35-year play-by-play announcer for the Indiana Pacers. 35 is right, isn't it, Mark?
37, but who's counting?
Oh, you, and I'm glad you are. 37 now.
It's two extra weeks of vacation, man. That's all that matters.
Mark, that's a lot of basketball, man.
It is, and let me tell you something. I've been blessed with really good health, so I never feel old, but every once in a while, something comes to your attention that makes you realize you are old, and I'll give you a specific example. When I got this job, I would say about half the players on the Pacer roster were older and half were younger than I was. Two seasons ago, in other words, 23, 24,
yeah.
On opening night, the Pacer roster did not contain a single player that was born when I started. So that's how you know you're old.
That's fun. Last year, you had some playoff action that was really good. You beat Milwaukee in the first round, six games. You beat the Knicks in the second round. Pacers get that done in seven games, swept by Boston. What did that experience do for the crew that the Cavaliers are going to face starting on Sunday?
It's not something that you can tangibly evaluate because it's an attitude, it's a mindset, and they felt good about themselves going in last year, but there's a definite difference this year. They don't just feel good. They were hoping to do well and were optimistic that they could last run. This time they are certain they're going to do well. Now, it doesn't mean they will do well, but you can just see when you're there every day going to the practices or seeing the guys in the hotel or on the bus before the game, you can just tell there's a different mindset. They felt good going in last year. They feel great going in now, and I don't know how you quantify that, but it's noticeable.
Going to Indianapolis is probably one of my favorite arenas to go to, and I know this might be kind of a trite question, but what does home court advantage mean in this series?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Theoretically, it's important. I asked Rick Carlisle about it before the Milwaukee series, and I guess he put it as well as anyone because teams have lost with home court advantage. The Pacers won Game 7 at the Garden, for example, last season. When I asked Rick, he said, what it means is this. Whoever has it for Game 7.
Makes sense.
And that's what he says. You can evaluate it any way you want, but the home team generally wins most of the time. Now, from case to case, it can be different. The Pacers went 1-1 in Milwaukee. The Bucks went 0-3 in Indianapolis. And the Pacers have been good, including the playoffs. They've won 15 of their last 17 at home. But they don't have the home court in this series, so they'll have to win at least one game in Cleveland, and that's assuming they win all the games in Indianapolis.
Mark Boyle joining us. He's the play-by-play man for the Indiana Pacers. I am a big Pascal Siakam fan. What difference has he made to that team? What did he bring when he came over?
Big difference. And we'll start with an intangible. He played on a championship team. So he brought that to the mix in last year's playoff run when most of the players on this team had either not participated or, if they had been eliminated almost at once. So that's an intangible. But then you look at the rest of what he does. He's the leading scorer on the team, both in the regular season and in the playoffs. And you really don't appreciate this about a guy until you watch him play every night. He's so consistent. He never goes for 40, but he never goes for 9 either. He's always shooting right around 50% or better. This season had a decent season shooting the three. He always gets his 5 or 6 rebounds, sometimes more. But he's almost always between, just throw numbers out, he's almost always between 17 and 23 points every night. So it's not a roller coaster ride with him. You can count on him for the same production every night. Plus, he's a good player. He's been an all-star. And when you add a good player and don't give up much to get him, really, when you get right down to it, if you look at that trade last year, the Pacers didn't give up anything they needed, and they got Siakam. So, big plus. And then the trade previous to that with Halliburton, one of the rare trades, at least in my view, that benefited both teams. The Pacers got Halliburton and Buddy Hield, who they then turned around and moved later. The Kings got Domantas Sabonis, who's been a really good player for them.
Sure.
So those two trades have really been major for the Pacers in terms of moving to the competitive level that they're at now.
Before I give you a final question about the series, we have a young guy from Cleveland who starred at the University of Akron, who went to the Pacers and didn't play a ton this year, but played a little bit. How has Enrique Freeman endeared himself to the organization? Because he's a great young guy.
Yes, he is. And everybody was so excited when we went into Cleveland on the 13th of April and sat most of the significant players, he got a chance to play in front of his hometown, 8 points, eight rebounds, a double overtime win. And if you were there, you saw this. And it wasn't just him. It was all the guys on the bench. But he was a big part of it. The regular guys who normally are in the game, they're in street clothes. And the excitement that they displayed watching Freeman and Johnny Furphy and Quentin Jackson and others tells you all you need to know about how these guys are evaluated. It's a very tight group. They support one another without exception. And Enrique Freeman, for a guy who didn't play very much, has become a very valuable and very admired guy.
Does he have a future there, Mark, where you think he could become a rotation player?
Yeah, I've been there 37 years, and I don't know if I have a future. So, you know. I'm not going to speculate on a guy that's been there for 10 minutes, but I hope so, because he's a great kid.
Yeah, he really is. I looking at this series overall, Mark, my last question to you. If the Cavs' front court can do what it's supposed to do and the back court doesn't get slowed down, I would think the Cavs. If the Pacer players who are out on that wing that can be an issue for the Cavaliers can really come through, Siakam, Nembhard, Nesmith, all these guys between 6'4 and 6'8, they could be a real challenge for the Cavaliers. I can't wait to see how it plays out. I would think this series goes deep. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would think it goes 6 or 7, but then I thought the Milwaukee series would go 6 or 7. So you might be asking someone who doesn't necessarily have a handle on the actual facts. But what you are saying, I would agree with, but on a general level, I would say the same thing. Almost every series comes down to this. Which team is better at exploiting their advantages? Which team can set the tempo, the tenor? The Pacers want to move up and down the floor. The Cavaliers have their own strengths. Who can take better advantages of their areas of influence? I think that's what it comes down to, and I think on a more specific level, you stated it very well.
Mark, great to have you with us, and we look forward to your work during the series and watching this one, because it could be a lot of fun. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mark.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for the invite.
Mark Boyle, play-by-play man of the Indiana Pacers, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mark Boyle was just with us, the Pacers' 37-year play-by-play guy. Mm.
And a lot of work.
That's a lot of basketball, isn't it?
Yes.
That's a lot of basketball. And to me, and I asked Mark about this, and he seemed to think, yeah, he's thinking along the same lines as we are. If you look at these two rosters, to me it screams, okay, what wins out? Is it the Cavaliers' combination of two really good guards who are on the smaller side,
mm-hmm,
and two really good big guys, Evan and Jarrett? And then, you know, so you got these two 6'1", 6'2 guys, and then you have 6'9", and 6'11", in Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. And then, you know, whatever you put it at small forward, whether that's Max Strus or Isaac Okoro for a you know, given time, or DeAndre Hunter. And then Indiana has four guys who start who are between 6'4 and 6'8. So they have these longer bodies who can mess with the Cavs' guards, but they don't have the bigger bodies other than Miles Turner. They have one, Miles Turner, who starts, who's 6'11", who's terrific. I like Miles Turner.
Mm-hmm.
So can the Cavs slow down these longer wing guys, basically, and a couple of them are guards, obviously. And can the Pacers not let either the two small guards for the Cavaliers or the two big guys for the Cavaliers dominate the series or dominate a game? So to me, it's a really interesting matchup in roster construction because they're very different.
But both teams like to score. both teams are very good
yep,
in the fourth quarter. I you know, he talked about the rebounding. I agree with him on that. I look at the series and I keep saying to myself, okay, this is going to be even. Yeah, and then I smack myself. It's not good. And then I punch myself and then I realize I'm looking in a mirror and then it's not good. But I just think the Cavs are a better team.
Well, I don't think there's any question.
So at the end of the day, I ask myself, why am I completely like nervous about this series? Well, I do think Indiana has the experience, more experience than the Cavaliers do.
They've had more playoff success than the Cavs had.
So I think those are the things that keep I need them to play already. You know what I'm saying? Because the regular season didn't mean anything, especially at the end of the year. No one was playing in those last two games of the year. So it's all kind of mythical as we walk into this series. And, you know, I was a little nervous about Miami, too. I'm not going to lie. Because we kept asking ourselves, can we believe what we're seeing? Can we believe what we're seeing? And now you'll see this against a team that is worthy of answering that question and worthy of saying, if they can beat the Pacers here, then who knows what the ceiling is for the rest of the season. And the more I think about this, I want to have the confidence in the Cavaliers that I just say, you know what, the Cavs should beat these guys in six. I don't think there's any question about this. And go do it. Maybe they'll have an off night. Maybe they'll have one of those nights where no one gets hot, or they don't have like they did in the beginning of the Miami series where they needed one guy to step up. They needed somebody to have a hot fourth quarter. They needed one guy to stand up above the rest. I think Indiana may have a couple of those guys too. That's, I think, our fear, and that maybe gives you the two in the six-game series. But if the Cavs play the way they know how to play, the way we've watched them play, if they move the ball, if they take smart shots, I still get so – and I say it every time I talk about this team. Nothing irritates me more than when they have a good lead and they step across the line and they take a shot like 5 seconds into the shot clock. They need to be smart against Indiana.
It's interesting to me that Mark brought up something that we talked about yesterday. Was it yesterday or the day before? That everything the Cavaliers have been great at this year, especially on the offensive side, you know, points, Cavs were first in the NBA, second in field goal percentage, second in three-point percentage. Everything the Cavs are great at, Indiana's pretty good at. And so...
But the rebounding part, I think he's right about that.
The rebounding is... Well, and that's what... You know, that's one of the things that I just threw out, Andy, because, you know, the Cavs have the two big guys. And that's a huge rebounding edge for the Cavaliers. They have Miles Turner, the Pacers. And other than that, you know, they're dealing with shorter guys, but not, you know, not 6'1", 6'2". And what, against many teams, huge advantage for the Cavaliers with offensive shooting, points, getting up and down the floor, not as big of an overall advantage for the Cavaliers against the Indiana Pacers. Doesn't mean it's not an advantage. It's just not a dominating situation as it was against many teams during the regular season. Bill called 216-474-0092. Hello, Bill.
Hey, guys. Jeff, hey, you're stealing my thunder, thank goodness. It's good. You know, this is where we have an advantage, and I think in basketball, it's always about where's the mismatch and where can you deliver on. And right now, the NBA is addicted to the three-point shot. And if we do that with our 2 6-foot-1 guards, we're playing into, it's not our weakness, but our strength was like one game with Miami. We scored 60 points in the paint. They scored 28. And so this is where if Mobley is leading our team in scoring or second in leading in scoring and shots.
Getting a lot of touches, Bill. I was just going to say that. Yep.
Well, Jeff, I thought you probably did. But he's got to have a lot of touches. And also, you know, both of the big men need a lot of touches. But anyway, if they do that, I don't think we'll have any trouble. Thanks a lot, you guys.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. I do think that I think the Cavs need to try to exploit the advantage that they have size-wise against Indiana, at least among the starters. Jim's in Strongsville. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys. Listen, I don't care about two small guards. If the Cavaliers lose this series, it'll be a major disappointment for Cleveland, and it'll be considered a major upset. I don't think there's a single guy on Indiana's roster matched up with the Cavaliers' counterpart is better. Maybe you can make an argument for Halliburton, but I would say that Halliburton, that's very close. And we're putting all this stuff on the big guys. Look, what it's going to come down to is what it always comes down to in the NBA, who shoots better, and particularly who shoots better from three. That's where the Cavaliers are good. I don't care that they're two small guards. Guess why? Because Darius Garland, at least lately, has been shooting the lights out. So you know what? I will trade 2 for 3 all day long with their big guards on Darius Garland. I would welcome Indiana to shoot and go 2 for 3 with us. That's just a recipe for disaster. I think we've seen from the Celtics, Golden State, and everybody else that 3 is more than 2.
The only thing there, Jim, Indiana's pretty good at shooting threes. They were 9th best in the NBA. It was 36.8 for them, 38.8 for the Cavs. So
how many more did we make, though?
I don't have in front of me.
Volume matters, too. Value matters in this, Jeff. You know what I mean?
Well, it does as long as you're hitting them. And the Cavs certainly hit them during the regular season. There's no question about that.
And they hit them in this last series against Miami.
We're going to cavalanche them. I don't care about our small guards.
Cavalanche. Nice. All right, Jim. Later, thanks, boys. Buddy. Appreciate that. And that's possible, Andy. It certainly is. I just, you know, in basketball, I think certainly more than in baseball, you know, the pitcher-batter matchup is a big deal. But, and more in football, man, matchups and the way a roster is constructed, and that gives coaches something to attack. You know, we're going to try this, we're going to do this. And if it doesn't work, then you adjust. You know, you'll have to adjust. And if it doesn't work and you can't adjust, well, then the other team wins the series, right?
Right.
And so that's, I think that's what we're going to see as this thing unfolds a little bit. How does that first game play out? Is Jim right? Do the Cavs put up so many threes and they hit them? Or do the Cavs put up a lot of threes, don't hit them? Does the length of Indiana out on the wings, out in the backcourt, you know, I mean, Halliburton's 6'5", big wingspan. He's going to be on Mitchell or Garland. Is he going to affect their shots? As Mark Boyle just told us.
I don't know. I mean, both those guys are good at getting around guys. I mean, they're really good at getting
without
around
question, guys, sure. And as Mark just told us, Nembhard, Nesmith, best defensive guys in the backcourt. Well, they're 6'4" and I think 6'6". You know, does that affect the Cavs' guards? We'll find out. You know, clearly, Darius Garland can play well against bigger competition. Clearly, Donovan Mitchell has no problem playing well against big competition. Does that happen in this series? So that's, to me, one of the fascinating things to watch as we get this thing rolling.
I don't know. I'm just looking for a fast-paced, high-scoring, ball-moving series where the Cavs are just a little bit better. And I like the Cavs' bench. Both teams can play really well in the fourth quarter. Is it going to be even? Yeah, it's going to be a tougher series than it was against Miami. It better be. I mean, Miami was the 10 seed.
Well, it has to be. Miami was awful. I'm stunned. I'm still stunned.
I don't want to sit here and go, oh, the Pacers. I believe in the Cavaliers, and I think that they should win the series, and I don't want to go into this timid or scared. Like, I'm glad I'm not playing.
Well, you shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, but if you're listening to what people are saying, it's like, I don't know about this, Cleveland. You got a challenge. Let's see if you're worthy to play Boston. And I'm just like, come on. Did you watch them all regular season for whatever it's worth? Like, I believe this team should have the confidence to go in there and think that they're going to be able to take care of business and move on to the next round. Am I going to say sweep? No. But they should be able to go in there, implement their dominance, do it right out of the gate in game one, and let's go. I'm not sitting around here talking about, stop it. Stop it. We're a damn good basketball team. I'm tired of like trying to inflate the other team, but it's not. I know it's not that way, but everything I'm hearing is about how Indiana is this and Indiana is that, and they can do this and they can match up with this. But I think we forget about how good our own team is. So I want to see these guys go out there, and I'd love to see them kick their you know what.
Danny Green, former Cavalier, our Odyssey NBA insider, will join us at 1:00. Schedule change. Daryl Ryder coming up at 12:40. Up next, Browns did something in the draft that everybody went, oh my gosh, what are they doing? What they're actually doing is something that's been done numerous times in recent history. Next on Baskin and Phelps.